I want to start this this talk by reading to you the following. A man and his wife were having some problems at home and were giving each other the silent treatment. Suddenly the man realized that the next day he would need his wife to wake him at 5 a.m. for an early morning business flight. Not wanting to be the first to break the silence and lose, he wrote on a piece of paper, quote, "Please wake me at 5 a.m. He left it where he knew she would find it. The next morning, the man woke up, only to discover it was 9 a.m. and he had missed his flight. Furious, he was about to go and see why his wife hadn't wakened him up, when he noticed a piece of paper by the bed. The paper said, "It's 5 a.m., wake up." Men are not equipped for these kinds of contests. I want to focus on this talk about the idea of the Torah's perspective and the Torah's keys to a happy and lasting marriage. And when we talk about the idea of the Torah's concept of marriage, it all begins, of course, with creation. It begins with Adam and Chava. Now, you wonder a little bit when we talk about Adam and Chava, when we sit at a wedding and we say, Sameach tesamach reim ahuvim, we want this couple to be as happy as the Chasan and Kala, who are reim ahuvim, who loved each other. Now, Adam and Chava didn't really have a choice, did they? It wasn't like there were other shidduchim out there for them. They sort of had to make do with what they had. And that may not be such a crazy idea, may not be such a crazy thing. It was an arranged marriage, certainly was, without question. But the context of this shir is really to be able to look at other places, and specifically the stories of our avos, of our forefathers, and see how their relationship with our foremothers can influence and impact how we look at our relationships today. And that begins by looking at the very first source that you have in front of you, the story of Avraham and Sarah. And we're going to talk about two contexts of the relationship between Avraham and Sarah. And the first is the following pasuk. Vayomru elav ayei Sarah ishtecha, vayomer hine ba'ohel. Where does this come from? What's the context here? Everyone knows this, come on.
Angels,
the malachim come to visit Avraham. The reason why the malachim came to visit Avraham is because they wanted to reveal to Avraham. One of the reasons was they wanted to reveal to Avraham that he was going to have a child. So what do the malachim say? The malachim say, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" The response of Abraham in a very happy way is, "Hine ba'ohel," she's in the tent. So Rashi comments, you see the underlined part of Rashi. Rashi comments based on the Gemara in Bava Metzia, in source number 2, says, "Omrim yodim hayu malachi asharis, Sarah imenu heichan haisa." The malachi asharis, the malachim certainly knew where Sarah imenu was. There's no question about that. So why is it that they asked Avraham Avinu, "Aye Sarah ishtecha, where is Sarah your wife?" The response of Rashi is, "Ela lehodia shetznua haisa," to say, to teach, in order to we should learn out that she was tznua, that she was modest, "kedei lechaviva al bala," in order to make her endeared to her husband. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz points out, you know, we have to look at this situation realistically. How old was Avraham at this time? Avraham was 99 years old. How old was Sarah? 90, right? Imagine that the malachim needed to be worried about their harmony, needed to be worried about their relationship, when here Sarah was 90 years old and Avraham was 99 years old. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, answers that we learn from here that people need to always be working on their marriage, even at an older age. That we can't think that we're at the stage, all the stages I presented earlier, that we're at a given stage in marriage, and therefore, okay, leave this aside. Now we're, you know, we're sort of where we are, where we are. Either we've gotten someplace, or we're going, you know, to just leave things as they are. Rather, we need to continue to work on our marriage throughout life, and not only that, but we need to continue to ensure that we share affection, even at our ripe old age, and as we grow together. Affection is not something that's simply reserved for newlyweds who can giggle together, but it's something that needs to be, you know, used later on in marriage as we grow together as well. And this is not the only lesson that's learned from the relationship between Avraham and Sarah. There's another one which is very significant, and it has to do, unfortunately, with the death of Sarah. Parshas Chayei Sarah, Abraham comes, of course, to Chevron, and he goes to Ephron Achiti, and he's looking for a place to bury his wife, Sarah. So the Gemara Kiddushin explains to us that the concept of Kiddushin comes from this idea of Avraham burying Sarah. We call it Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron. That the Kesef, the fact that a man betroths his wife to him with Kesef, with money, which is a ring that we value at money, that comes from this concept of Avraham buying Ma'aras HaMachpelah from Sarah. So the Chazal, our rabbis, teach us that the idea here is not just simply that Avram was performing the chesed shalemes. We always talk about burial being the chesed shalemes. Why? Because any chesed that we do for someone, that person could always repay us for the chesed that we do for them, for the kindness that we present, that we give to them. But when it comes to burying the dead, the person who died can't repay us for the chesed that we are going to do for them. So we call it chesed shalemes. Here, meaning true and honest chesed. Here, Avram is performing the chesed shalemes, the true and kindness for his wife after she's died and can't be repaid. So Chazal explained that the reason why we equate this and we ensure that at the very beginning, at the very start of marriage, right under that chuppah, when a couple just begins life, before we go through any of the brachos, the first thing we do is we have the kiddushin even before the ksuba is read. It's because we want a couple to understand that the mainstay of your marriage is about doing chesed for each other. What type of chesed? So now you'll all know, everyone in this room will understand that chesed shel emes should not only be being involved with the chever kaddisha. I'm saying this on a different level. Now I once had a friend who said to me, hey, there's a lot of connections, this is when he got married, for him, for his wife. There's a lot of connections between between marriage and death, right? Sheva brachos, sheva. I said to myself, well, good luck. But the concept, the idea is that here you have an opportunity your entire life to perform chesed. But it's important. What kind of chesed are you performing? Are you performing chesed? Am I performing chesed to my spouse in order that my spouse performs chesed for me? Or am I performing chesed for my spouse, which is a chesed shel emes, which is a true chesed, the ability and desire of me to give of myself for my spouse, to perform kindness for my spouse, so my spouse can feel loved, so that my spouse can feel that someone cares about them. That's what marriage is all about. And that's a lesson that we learn inherently based on the Gemara and Kiddushin from Avraham Avinu. The second thing that I'd like to share with you, which is not on the source sheet, is going through the Avos, is that of Yitzchak and Rivka. And I would not have the chutzpah to say this if it's not brought down in the Gemara and the Rishonim themselves, that Chazal speak about the nature of the relationship between the Avos and the Avos and their spouses. Avraham and Sarah, the tznius that existed between them, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov together with Rachel and Leah. So when it comes to Yitzchak and Rivka, we see something which is very unique and interesting. What happens when Yitzchak first sees Rivka? So the Pasuk says, Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh, Yitzchak goes out to daven in the field, Rashi tells us he went out to daven mincha, and all of a sudden he sees Vayar v'hinek malim bo'im, he sees that there are camels coming. Who are on these camels? Rivka, Eliezer and Rivka, right? So what does Rivka do? She says as follows. She says, Mi ha'ish halazeh, right? Who is this person? She says to Eliezer, who's this person who is coming here, who's coming in our direction? And the response of Eliezer is, Vayomer ha'eved hu adoni. He responds and he says, this is my master, right? Vatikach ha'tza'if vatiskash. She covers herself, as you all said, but you left something else out. What else does she do? She fell off the camel. She didn't get off the camel. She fell off the camel. And Chazal explained that the nature of the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, and might possibly explain some of the later conversations that Yitzchak and Rivka had, was the fact that Rivka was in awe of Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak was this Ola Tamima. Yitzchak was the Korban who was on the Akedah. He was literally about to be a korban, a sacrifice to Hashem. He was so pure and holy that Rivka always looked at her husband in a way in which she was she was awestruck by him. And because of that, that had nature, had an impact on the nature of their relationship as well. That perhaps, that this impacted the way in which they made certain decisions because of the fact that one spouse was in awe of the others. Now, one can be in awe of their spouse in a positive way. That's a great thing. But if it takes away from the other spouse being able to have a relationship in which they feel that they can share their emotions, in which they feel that they can connect on a way that is satisfying to them, and it's important that I say that because couples have, there's no straight recipe for success and happiness in marriage. Every couple has a different measure of what success and what happiness is. Recently I had a client and we're going through goal setting and the client says, you know, what do you want out of life? And he says, I want to be happy. Okay, that's great. You want to be happy. But what do you define as happiness? Because we could all, if I take a survey of this room and I ask everyone to define happiness and I tell you to write it on a piece of paper, no one else hears what anyone else says, we might come up with many different answers because happiness is something that we can define differently. So each couple has their own understanding of what happiness is. And here when it came to Yitzchak and Rivka, perhaps Rivka was happy with the fact that she saw Yitzchak as being that Ola Tamima, being that Korban, and the awe that she had of him. But that would have an impact on their relationship, the nature of the relationship, where you have, when you have one thing, you might be missing something else. Your question.
Contrast that to Yitzchak and Rivka being seen by Avimelech jesting with each other as a man and a wife, while that wasn't visible to Avimelech.
Okay. Vehine Yitzchak mitzachek es Rivka ishto. Okay. So that doesn't mean, that doesn't impact the fact that the nature of their relationship may have been very different, right? They can still have been intimate with each other, but they may have been intimate with each other on a different level. So their intimacy may not have been all in all a relationship which was more of a different balance. It's what they conjured up as their relationship.
So it seemed they had a hand, as you said, a hand-holding relationship while their parents did not.
They had a hand-hold, what do you mean by that?
Well, an outsider, Avimelech, was able to tell from how they acted towards each other that they were not brother and sister, that they were husband and wife. While he was not able to see that same interaction
Okay. It's a fair question. I'm not prepared to answer it because of the fact that you have to look in the Meforshim when it comes to Avram and Sarah, that maybe Avram and Sarah, maybe it was just by chance that Avimelech was able to see Yitzchak and Rivka, and not by chance that he was able to see Avram and Sarah. Were Avram and Sarah together intimately when they were down in Gerar? I don't know the answer to that. I could think that the answer may be no, because we see in other places. In Chazal, we see in the Mefarshim, it talks about the fact that during a time of Ra'av, during a time of famine, that husband and wife were not together as they normally would be. So it could be that Yitzchak did something which was not as normal for the time as based on the famine, because he was comfortable where he was living in Gerar, as opposed to Avram and Sarah, who were not comfortable based on the famine being there. I'm just throwing that out as a possibility. Then I want to move on to Yaakov and Rachel. And there's a very powerful lesson from Yaakov and Rachel. Of course, the deep love that Yaakov had for Rachel was seen from the very beginning. The fact that Yaakov invests so much time in his relationship, the fact that he's able to not only be disappointed once, but he keeps his eye on the ball and he knows where he wants to get. He knows that Rachel is his love of his life. But then we see something troubling right in the middle of their relationship. And that is the interaction between Yaakov and Rachel as Leah is popping out children left and right, and Rachel is still an Akara. Rachel is still a woman who has not, as of yet, given birth. So the Pasuk says that Rachel turns to Yaakov and says, Havali bonim, give me sons, give me children, v'im ayin mesa anochi, and if not, I'm going to die. And Yaakov gets angry at her. And how does Yaakov respond to his wife? Right? And he says the following. He says, the pasuk says, "Vayicharaf Yaakov beRachel, vayomer hatachas Elokim anochi. Am I God, right? Asher mona mimeich pri button, who has stopped from you, right? Who has held from you pri button, fruit of your womb." So Rashi talks about there that the idea of mona mimeich, meaning has stopped from you, that Hashem has not allowed you to have children. And why did he say you? because I'm able to have children. I had children with Leah. Stopped you from having children. So the Medrash says something which is so powerful, and you wouldn't believe it, and I certainly would never even say it if the Medrash didn't write it. The Medrash says to Yaakov Avinu, the Medrash says, how do you speak to a woman who is barren? Kach ma'animis had, is this the way that we answer women who are having a difficult time having children? So the Rashi and the Ramban all talk about the idea of what Rachel really wanted here. The Medrash's words were, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kach onimis ha-me'ikos. Is this the way in which we answer people who are struggling to have children? Which also conjures up a little bit of a memory for us of the discussion of Chana and the struggle that Chana had. We read on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we read after Torah, of Chana and Penina. And remember how Penina was pushing Chana and was really giving it to her and making her feel very bad. And one of the Mefarshim explains that the reason why Penina was doing this to Chana was because she wanted to get her to really daven, because she understood that if she was really going to daven from the depths of her heart, then she would really have be able to have a Kodesh Baruch Hu respond to her. But she gave her a very hard time. So Rashi says that what Rachel was really asking Yaakov to do was to daven for her like his father davened for his mother. How did Rivka, when Rivka was also barren, when she couldn't have children, Yitzchak davened for Rivka that she should have children. But yet there's a problem with that Rashi. Because Yaakov, he didn't feel the necessity to daven the same way his father did. Why? His father didn't have any children. Remember, Yitzchak was an Ola Tamima, he only had one wife. All the others, they only had one wife. He was only together with one woman. So Yitzchak saw himself as, look, if I'm going to have children, it's going to be with this wife. So it was not only just davening for my wife, it's davening for me as well. So Yaakov says, it's impossible for me to daven for you, Rachel, like my father davened for my mother, Rivka. Because there, he was davening, you know, for both of them. Whereas here, I'm just davening for you. So here's a little piece that we can take on one step further on this Rashi, which is, maybe what Rachel really wanted from Yaakov was to change the nature of their relationship, which is hard for us to really understand because he had multiple wives. But maybe what Yaakov was really saying to, what Rachel was really saying to Yaakov was, yes, bedavka, Rashi's right, bedavka, just the same way that your father Yitzchak davened for Rivka, because he sought impact both of us, right? Yitzchak davened for Rivka because he said, we need to have children. So Rachel says, Yaakov, I need the same thing from you. Don't daven for me. Daven for both of us. Because the nature of the relationship is such that not only do I need to have children because I want to have children as a woman, but we need to have children because my children from you will bring around all of the Shvatim, all of the Shiftei Ka. Without you having children from me, all the Shvatim, all the tribes will not be complete. That's one suggestion. The Ramban says that what Rachel desired from Yaakov was something that we all desire from our spouses. And what she desired was just for Yaakov Avinu to empathize, to feel her pain, to feel her anguish, to feel that he connected with how she was feeling. That's something that we can learn from, which is not difficult. It's something that is something that's needed for every day when it comes to our marriages. And I wanted to take a look in source number 3 at the Rambam and how the Rambam defines what marriage is all about. And he has halacha yutes and halacha chaf. So either the men or the women don't get excited when I just read one halacha. Wait till I read the other halacha too. Okay? Halacha yutes, the Rambam says as follows. V'chein tzivu chachamim, she'ye adam mechabed es ishto yoser migufo. The Torah, the Chachamim, command that a man respect his wife more than himself, meaning more than himself on a physical level. The ohava, and he loves her kegufo, that he has to love her just like he loves himself. V'im yesh lo mamon marbe b'tovasa kefi hamamon, and if he has money, he spends the money on his wife. We all love this, but wait, I'll get to the other one next. Velo yatil aleha ema yisera, and he should not put fear into his wife, into their relationship. V'yehye diburo ima benachas, and he should speak with her. His language, his way of speaking with her, should be benachas, should be with kindness, should be soft. Velo yehye etzev, he should not be sad. Velo roges, and he should not be angry, harsh. you imagine here the Rambam is saying that one of the obligations of a husband to a wife is not only to speak softly, but one of the obligations from a husband to a wife is that you're not allowed to be sad. Could you imagine that? I said in my shiur yesterday that we're entering now the Bein HaMetzarim. Tuesday is Shavuot Sivatamuz. We're entering the period of 3 weeks. So the Gemara in Tanya says that Kashem Minichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha. That when the month of Av comes, we're Mima'at B'Simcha. What does Ma'at mean? Mima'at. From Ma'at. Ma'at is to have a little. So what do we learn out of this? The Gemara doesn't say that we curb Simcha altogether. The Gemara says that we're Mima'at B'Simcha, we have a little bit. We have to make our Simcha less than we have it during the entire year. When it comes to Adar, we're Marvin B'Simcha. We have a lot of Simcha. We're very happy. But when it comes to Av, we're Mima'at. We bring down the tone, the volume of our Simcha, of our happiness. What we learn from there is that a person has to be B'Simcha all the time, even during the time of Av. Even during this period of time, which is the saddest time in the Jewish calendar, we still have to have a sense of Simcha. And what the Rambam is saying is that a husband is obligated to bring that sense of Simcha, of that joy, into one's marriage. And if one is not able to have Simcha, to be happy, or at the very least, not make their wife or their spouse sad, then one has to do some work on their own in order to make sure that they have the ability to bring happiness into their home. So now let's look at what the obligations of the wives. And similarly, the Chachamim commanded upon the wife, Shetiye mechabedes es baala biyoser midai. She should honor her husband. V'yelo aleha mora v'tasa kol ma'aseha alpiv. She should do everything her husband asks of her. Whew. Right? V'yeye be'eneha k'mosar o melech. Oh, goodness. Right? So during the times of the Rambam, that the wife should look at the husband as being a sar, a prince, a minister, a melech. Mahaleches b'tavas libo. She should follow the tava, the desire of his heart. Umarachekes kol sheyisna. She should stay away from everything that he hates. Okay, this is also an important thing to think back and forth, right? How many times do we do things because we want to do things, even though we know that our spouses absolutely detest those things? And how many times do we say, well, okay, my spouse is just going to have to suffer because that's just the way it is? So in my last session, when I spoke about the concept of otherness and respecting our spouses as being who they are, at the same time, when we said that there are certain things that we can change and certain things that we can't change, and one of the things that we can't change is our spouses, at the same time, what we can change is the way that we approach our spouses. And specifically, in this area, the fact that we know that there are some things that really rub our spouses the wrong way, but we can't take it out of our system, because we don't allow ourselves to. And we make our spouses suffer because of it. So that, says the Rambam, is inappropriate and incorrect. If there's something that your spouse hates, then it's something that you have to be merachik. You have to move far away from. V'zehu derech benos Yisrael, and this is the derech, the path of benos Yisrael, of Jewish women. U'b'nei Yisrael akdoshim atahorim b'zivugan. U'b'derachim elu yiyu yishuvan na'el meshubach. And through this way, their yishuv, their being together, will be na'e, will be beautiful, will be nice, and meshubach will be praiseworthy. You know, it's very interesting to see the distinction between the way the Torah presents the obligation of the king, and when they do so in Sefer Devarim, and when the Torah presents the obligation of the king in Sefer Shmuel. Okay? The king, when it comes to Sefer Devarim, is presented in the following way. Watch the words, and you'll see the very interesting distinction. When you come to the land of Israel that Hashem gives to you, you're sitting in it. I want a king. Every other nation has a king. I want a king too. Okay, you can have a king, God says. You can have a king. Just make sure that your king is Jewish. He has to be one of your brothers. You can't take a king who is not a Jew, who is not one of your brothers. And let me tell you about this king. Here are the rules for the king. King, you can't have a lot of horses. And you can't bring the people back to Egypt. That's why you can't have a lot of horses. Because where do the horses come from? They come from Egypt. Right? So if you're going to have a lot of horses, you can want more horses, you're going to go back to Egypt.
You're going to bring the people back to Egypt. Not a good thing. We left Egypt. We're not going back. Everybody saw that little, there's this little email going around when the riots were taking place in Egypt. Someone sent out an email that basically said, showed the pyramids and said, dear Egyptians, please do not destroy the pyramids. We're not going to come back to rebuild them. Right? Signed the Jews. Right? So that's what the king had to make sure he didn't do. He didn't bring the Jews back to Mitzrayim. God said, you can't go back there. He can't have many wives. And therefore his heart can't be swayed. Because the more wives you have, the more your heart is swayed. Who did that happen to? Shlomo Melech, of course, right? Because Shlomo Melech said, don't worry, I'll have a lot of wives, my heart won't be swayed. Fortunately, it wasn't the case. This sounds very different than a king of today, right? Not allowed to have a lot of silver, not allowed to have a lot of gold, not allowed to have a lot of horses, not allowed to have a lot of wives. Sounds pretty rough. Why would you want to have a king? The Hayak is Shifto, Akise Mamlachto, and then when he sits on his throne, the Chasavo is Mishnah Torah Zos, Asefer, Melithne, Akohanim, Alevim, and he has to write the entire Torah, and he has to keep the Torah with him. L'man Yilmad L'Yiraz Hashem Elokav. The purpose of the king is to have Yira, to have fear of Hashem. So the king has no independence. The purpose of the king, clearly in the psukim here, is to be for the people, not to be for himself, not to fill himself and fill his pockets with jewels, with money, or fill himself with wives, or fill himself with any earthly pleasures. It's all about having Yiras Hashem and being the leader of the people. Now, contrast that with the description of the king in source number 5. Vayomer Shmuel is called Yirei Hashem al Am Hashalim Meitom Melech. All the people came to Shmuel and said, Shmuel, we want a king. So listen to what Shmuel responds. Okay, Vayomer Zei Yemishpat Melech Hashem Yimloch Aleichem. This is what the king is going to look like. As Benechem Yikach, he's going to take your sons. Besam Lo Merkavto, he's going to put them in his chariots. Uvvarashav v'rotzu lifnei merkavto, and they're going to run in front of his chariots. V'lasum lo sari alafim v'sari chamishim v'lachrash chamisha, they're going to dig up the ground for him. V'liktzor tzira, they're going to cut his field. V'lasos kol, and they're going to do everything. Milchamto, he's going to fight their wars. Uchle richbo v'esnosechem yikach, and he's going to take your daughters, and he's going to have them be bakers and cooks for him. Best dosechem, best karmechem, he's going to take your fields, he's going to take your vineyards, he's going to take your olive trees, and he's going to take your children to be slaves for him, he's going to take all that you grow. And you know what? You start to think to yourself, maybe I don't really want a king. Uze'atem bayom mahu militnei malkechem, asher b'chartem lachem, v'lo yaneschem bayom ha'ashem eschem bayom mahu. And you're going to cry out, and you're going to say, God, why'd you give us a king? I don't want a king. So what do we see here? Sefer Devarim, all the great things about being a king, but it's all about Yiras Hashem. It's all about fearing God. The king doesn't have all these pleasures. When you look at it from the perspective of the people, though, the king just took everything from us. So I'd like to bring this into the idea of marriage also, that we have opposite ways sometimes of looking at things. Right? A person can't be all one way, and a person can't be all another way. If you're looking at the very same thing, there is a way to look at it from two different angles. You're looking at the same king, and when you look at it from the perspective of being the king, you say to yourself, if I'm a Jewish king, I don't have what the non-Jewish kings have. I don't have the ability to have all these pleasures. And my purpose is just to lead the people and to do it al-Pi Hashem, according to God's will. But if you look at it from the perspective of the people, and you say, wow, look at that king. He gets to take anyone to work for him. He gets to have everything that he possibly wants. And I think sometimes when it comes to the nature of our marriages, when we don't communicate appropriately, we tend to look at one of our spouses having much more than the other. I think we need to try to strive to be able to look at our marriages in a fair sense and in a fair light. I want to skip down to source number 10, which is a concept that Rav Soloveitchik introduced in his book, Family Redeemed. And I want to read you the following concept and see how we could apply it to our discussion. The cause of marriage is the exasperating and desolate feeling of loneliness. Okay? He's referring to the idea of the fact that Hashem says, man is alone. In source number 9, one of the first pasuk there, Vayikra Adam Shema Sechala Behema Lof Hashemayim, Adam named all animals, birds and animals, l'cholchayas asada, wild beasts, ula adam lo matza ezer kinegda. And man did not find a helper to him.
it sounds like man is very lonely. So says Rav Soloveitchik, the goal of marriage is the redeeming experience of life and fellowship. It's the ability for man to no longer be lonely. It's the idea of having fellowship, of having connection. While the first account deals exclusively with the physiological sexual differentiation of male and female and their joint capacity for procreation, the second account completely omitted this aspect of the male-female relationship. Neither the physiological fact of sexual differentiation nor the biological moment of reproduction is mentioned in the second account. If you look when it talks about the idea in source number 9, after what I just read, by Yipol Hashem Elohim, Tardem al Adam Aisha, when Hashem makes man fall asleep, by Yikach Achas Mitzalosav, he takes one of his ribs, by Yiskor Basar Tachtena, and he covers it so that man can't see where it came from. By even Hashem Elohim Esatzela, Shalakach Min Adam Lisha, by Yiviel al Adam, he makes this tzela, this rib, into a human being, into a woman, and brings it to Adam, by Yom HaAdam, and what does Adam say? So sapam etzem ead samai ubasar mi besari luzosi kare isha ki me ish lukachazos. From here, right, this came from me. Luzosi kare isha, this should be called an isha because it comes from ish. Al ken yazov isha sali ves imo vidavak the ish tovai lehayu ubasar echad. Therefore, man should leave his mother and father and create dveikos, connection with one spouse, lehayu ubasar echad, and they should be one. The Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin talks about the fact that why is it that the nature of the world is that a man finds a wife as opposed to a woman finding a husband. Right? I guess in our society maybe it's changed a little bit. But certainly, historically, that's what it always was, the nature of man to be seeking a woman to marry. So the Gemara says, it's Nimsha la'adam sha'adam sha'avad la'aveda. The mashal is, the analogy is to a person who lost an object. So who looks for whom? Is it the Baal Aveda, the person who lost the object, looks for Avedaso, looks for that which the person lost? Or is it that the Aveda, the actual thing, item that was lost, looks for its owner? So the answer is, as the Gemara says, it's obviously that the individual who lost the object looks for the object. So when we talk about the concept of marriage, and we talk about the idea of a relationship being made in heaven, and we talk about the idea of a couple literally seeking each other out, we're really talking about the analogy of one missing something. The source of what one is missing is this idea of the tzela, this idea of how Adam was created. So we continue in what Rav Soloveitchik was saying. In contrast to the sexual polarity of male and female, zachar and nekeva, the Bible switches to ish and isha. You notice that in the first psukim here, in source number 8, it says, Zachar u'nekeva bara osam, created them male and female. Whereas afterwards, we talk about ish and isha. Very big difference between the two. When they're zachar u'nekeva, they're just beings. When they're ish and isha, they're partners. And that's the distinction. Apparently, according to the second account, God was concerned not with the couple's biological motives and goals, with the meeting of male and female for the express purpose of procreation. Meaning when Hashem said Zachar and Nekeva, that was just the idea of, okay, Zachar and Nekeva, they match. In other words, biologically, they can combine on a physical level in order to procreate and to bring about the continuance of humanity. But when it comes to Ish and Isha, there's much more to it. It can't just be about the intimate relationship and the ability to procreate. Rather, Ish v'Isha is the solving of the concept of loneliness, that man cannot be left alone, and that we as human beings, on an emotional level, need to have companionship, need to have fellowship. Apparently, according to the second account, God was concerned not with the couple's biological motives and goals, with the meaning of male and female for the express purpose of procreation, but with the spiritual incompleteness of lonely man and his need for ontological oneness with another individual. If, in a word, the focal point in the second story of the emergence of man is not the biological urge, but the tragic urge of man, who is the only conscious being in creation, is well aware of his greatness and the vast opportunities which lie before him, and at the same time of his inner contradictions, imperfections, and final defeat. And perhaps that is also an important piece that we need to keep in mind. Imperfections. I remember when my oldest son was in first grade, his teacher complained to us and said that he looks like he's a perfectionist. He's always being very critical of himself. And she said that what she tells him is that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only Hashem is perfect. One of the ways that we succeed in marriage is by coming to the conclusion that we ourselves are not perfect beings and that our spouses are not perfect beings. And it's okay for us to make mistakes because only Hashem is the perfect, perfect one in our lives and in our world. It's important for couples to have the ability to always make decisions and share with each other before making important decisions. And one of the famous places that we see that is we visit one of the great sages of the Talmud, which is someone we're familiar with from, most familiar with, from the Pesach Seder. And that is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Everybody remember the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Part we remember him from is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare ani kaven shivim shana. It's as if I'm 70 years old. So the Gemara tells us a story that he wasn't really 70 years old. He was a very young man. And they were looking for a new head of the Talmudic Academy. And they said, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you shouldn't be the new head. But he was too young. So 70 rows of white hair grew into his beard the night before he became the head. And that's why he says, Hare ani kaven shivim shana, as if I'm 70 years old. So look what happens in Gemara Brachos and Daf Chav Zayin, source number 11, as to what happened when they approached Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and they said to him, we want you to become the head of our Talmudic Academy. What was his response? Ve'amrulei, and he responded to them, they said to him, Nichalei lemar, is it good, is it okay for mar, for master, v'lahave resh mesifta, to be the head of the mesifta, to be the head of the yeshiva? Amar lehu, he responded to them, Aizel ve'imlech be'inshe beisi, I have to go check in my home. Azal the Amlich Bidibisu. He went home and he checked with his wife. Elazar ben Azariah. He went home and he checked with his wife. How many times do we make decisions and then say, okay, I know how my spouse is going to feel about this. Don't worry, I just do it. And then you come home and then you realize that your spouse is furious. How could you make that decision without me? And we say, what do you mean? Right? The lack of either sensitivity or insight, the ability to share and to think that my actions are going to have an impact on the family. So you say, well, it only has to do with me. It's about me. It's about something that has to do with me only. The answer is if I look at life and if I look at marriage as me, then it's not a marriage of we. Virtually every act that we have has some kind of influence on the members of our family. And certainly when it comes to spouses, that's number one. So we have to keep in mind that the ability to ask of our spouses when it comes to everything is something which is essential for marriage. You know, often we become very set in our ways, and it's difficult for us when we're set in our ways to find the ability to make a compromise and find some space in the middle. You know, marriage, as I mentioned before, regarding Avraham Avinu, is the ability for us to perform chesed. And it's also the ability for us to work on our midos, to work on our character traits every single day of our lives. And isn't it great that we don't have to walk outside and work on our character traits with other people? We could just work on our character traits when we're at home with our spouses. It's a wonderful opportunity if we look at it that way. So we're going to see an incredible insight now into a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. And I'll tell you right now, you will never look at a mezuzah the same way again. So if anyone wants to keep their thoughts of mezuzah as it is now, you can leave, and I'll invite you back in 5 minutes. But if you want to look at mezuzah in a different way, now things are going to change. So says the Shulchan Aruch in source number 12, Tzricha lios is the kufa. A mezuzah has to be straight. Arka la'orach mezuzah sa pesach has to be lengthwise. V'yichaven shi'yeh shma d'haynu sof ha'galila l'tzad chus. And if you ever notice on a mezuzah, if you have the cloth itself, so the Shema has to be facing forward. That's where they make a little depiction of a shin. So you should know that the Shema is facing the front part of the mezuzah. There's no mezuzah on the door here, so I can't have a show and tell. Says the Rama. Now the Mechaber, who is of course Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo is the creator of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch itself is the set table. The set table so that we can understand halacha just as straight brought out to us in a set way, instead of having to decipher the Gemara and start coming up with halachos ourselves. Just says it to us straight. So many of the halachos that are written down by Rav Yosef Karo in the 1600s were commented on by the Rama. The Rama is the grandfather of Ashkenazic Jewry. Rav Moshe Isserlish. And the Rama disagreed with some of the things that the Mechaber said, because he felt that the customs in Eastern Europe were different than they had been at the times of the Mechaber. So he would comment on the words of the Mechaber. So the Rama, where it says Hagah, says V'chein Hagu, yes, and that's the Minhag. Aval Yesh Amrim Shepsula Bizakufa. He quotes a Yesh Amrim that says that it's not allowed to be straight. The mezuzah can't be straight like my finger is right now. Ella tzricha lihios shechuva. He says, rather, this opinion says that the mezuzah should be like that. Right? It should be straight in the other direction. Archa l'rochev mezuzah ha-pesach. Anybody ever see a mezuzah that way? No, I should hope not, because then we'd have a problem. V'hamidaktikin, listen to what the Ramah says, V'hamidaktikin, those who are very careful when it comes to this mitzvah of mezuzah, yotzin yidei shnehem. Their yotzei, they fulfill both of these customs. How so? U'menichem osa b'shipua u'v'alachsam. V'chein ro'oi linhog v'chein no'agim b'medina se'ilu. Says the Ramah, you know what you do? Instead of having it straight, one way or the other way, what you do is you have it curve a little bit, so that it's facing inward. Okay? So look at the state zofim, the comment of the state zofim. And he says as follows. Where do we ever find such a concept, a compromise? Here you have the Mechaber says the mezuzah has to be straight. You have the Ramah says it has to be like this, quotes the Yesh Amrim, and he says, okay, let's make a compromise between the two. We'll make the mezuzah go a little bit to the side. Where have we ever heard of such a thing? So he says, Mimonaf kemina halacha kemi. He says, veloma tzinu psharos ela bedini mamonos bilvad. We only find the concept of pshara, of compromise, when it comes to monetary issues, when it comes to financial issues. So for example, if a person ever takes a case to a bezdin, the first thing that a bezdin, a rabbinical court, will try to do is they'll try to find a pshara. They'll say to both sides, okay, let's meet somewhere in the middle. We only find this, as it says, tofim, when it comes to monetary cases. We don't find it when it comes to issues of halacha. He says, "V'lo b'shar chelkei Torah." Umadua efa b'mitzvahs mezuzah hichriya Ramah b'derech pshara. Why did the Ramah come out and say we need to compromise when it comes to mezuzah? So look at the second paragraph. He says, "Amma b'derech tzchos hine inyan hamezuzah hi shmira al habayis." He says, "What is mezuzah about? Mezuzah is about shmira, guarding the home. L'remez lanu bazeh d'imrotim shi yeshalom bayis." That if we want to have shalom bayis, Sarich kol echad levater ulchafuf atzmo ktsas litzad hasheni. If you want to have shalom bayis, then you can't be straight one way or the other. If you want to have shalom bayis, if you want to have marital harmony, then each person, each spouse, needs to move themselves a little bit toward the side of the other spouse. Each spouse needs to understand the concept of compromise, even a little bit, to be able to work in the right direction. Inyan zeh shel pshara kedei sheyiskayem habayis. If you want the house to be a home in which, I'll take it one step further, a home in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, is shoreh, his presence, takes his presence and places it within one's home. As we say, we want the Shekhinah to be in our homes, then the way to do that is by pshara. The way to do that is by making sure that we compromise. Compromising, as I mentioned before, does not mean negating one's existence. Compromising means respecting our spouses and who they are. It doesn't mean that I'm compromising, therefore I'm negating who I am. I'm giving in, so that means I lose. Rather, it means that I'm able to be kofef a little bit. Right? We don't put the mezuzah all the way in. We put the mezuzah a little in, bending toward each other. And if spouses bend a little bit toward each other, as I mentioned before with the mirroring technique, if we bend toward each other, if we look toward each other, if we communicate at each other when looking at each other, then slowly but surely we can make sure that not only is compromise a part of our marriage, but the conflict becomes less of a problem as it was. So, marriage is about lifelong challenge of perfecting one's midos. It's all about we and not about me. It's the inherent contradiction in ahava, in marriage. We spoke before about the idea of hav, about giving, the ability to give. It's the idea of not being selfish. It's the idea of giving and not taking. And if a person makes sure that they give and they don't take, they'll indeed receive on the other side. It's a matter of being able to think about our spouses and think about our spouses' needs and not solely thinking about our own needs. I want to share with you a story, which is actually written up in source number 14, which is written and spoken about a great gadol of Rav Meir Chodosh, who saw a young man doing something on an Erev Shabbos. And what we learn from this story, he says as follows: Pam avarti biyom shishi bishchunas geula. On one Friday, I was walking in Geula. Upagash osi hamashkiach, and one day the mashkiach, Reb Meir Chodosh, saw me. Right? He saw me. Vishal, and he asked me, im kanisi kvar prachim leishti. He asked me if I already bought flowers for my wife for Shabbos. Nidhamti me'asheela. I was troubled by the question. V'amarti lo, Baruch Hashem, I said to him, thank God, ani chai tov imishti. I'm living well, I have a good marriage. V'ein tzorach b'piyusim. And we don't need to buy things for each other. We don't need to be mefayes each other. To be mefayes means when you're in a fight with someone, so you want to make yourself, make them feel better, so you buy something for them or you give something to them. He says, we have a good marriage, we don't need to do that. Amar li, he said to me, meaning Rav Meir Chodosh said to him, Matanos ze lo lefayes. Gifts are not to appease. Ela laharich es haisha. He says, rather, it is to lengthen, meaning to allow one spouse to feel good about the other. V'ray lakach shebegemara matzino sherichia kashara davar yafe, kracho besudar v'nosno leishto. The Rabbi Chia, when he saw something nice, he would gather it up, he would wrap it up in a sudar, in a napkin, and he would take it for his wife. So he says, agam sheishto tziira otziara oso kemavur begemara sham. And he says, and that's not so simple, because the Gemara says that Rabbi Chia's wife was not that very nice to him. And nevertheless, even though she wasn't that nice to him, he still tried to be mefayis, to appease her. Ela'etzam ha'aracha v'his yachsus mechayev litein matana. He says, the absolute core of our relationship is to be able to be mefayis, to appease. And appease doesn't mean, it's not a fair word, because appease means that I need to make somebody to bring them over from where they are. That if we're in conflict or we're arguing, therefore I need to appease my spouse. Whereas what Rav Chodosh was saying, no, appeasement is not only when things aren't going well, appeasement is also when things are fine. But listen to what he continues. The Hosif Rabbi Meir, Lamani Omer Liknos Prachim. He says, why do I say to you, did you buy flowers? Velo davar acher, and not something else. Ki b'knias chefetz acher, ein mochiach shekabanoso lishma. Because if you buy something else, then you won't reveal that your real true intention is for the purpose of making your wife happy. It's possible that he himself will also benefit, and therefore he's buying it for himself. It's about the guy who buys his wife a coffee machine for Mother's Day. Right? So some of us say, well, that's very nice. I'm not talking about the guy who buys his wife a vacuum for Mother's Day. That's a separate level. That's a separate issue. I hope no one here has that problem. But the guy who buys his wife a coffee machine for Mother's Day, he said to her, look, honey, I bought your coffee machine. Aren't you so happy? So her first reaction is, yeah, and who's going to clean it every day? Right? Well, so if I buy you the coffee machine, and I buy you a little card with it that says, coffee machine plus cleaning every day by me, maybe we could talk about that being a real Mother's Day present. But if I buy my wife a coffee machine every day, and I drink 2 cups in the morning, so says Rav Meir Chodosh, so who did I really buy that coffee machine for? Yeah, I bought it for my wife because together as a couple, it's good for us. But it's not for her. I didn't buy it for her. And I didn't show in my buying this that this is exclusively for her. I'm buying this for you because I care about you. Right? So I bought this, but I'm getting some benefit out of it. How careful that we have to be when it comes to the gifts or the things that we buy for our spouses, that we make sure we don't buy it for ourselves per se, but we're truly buying it for them because it's an expression of the care that we have for them. Aval prachim hu misug dvarim sheshayach rak lenashim. So Meir Chodosh says, flowers, men don't like flowers, right? Only women like flowers. So that's why I told you to buy flowers for your wife, because that way she'll know that you're really buying it for her. Well, sometimes we have a separate problem when your wife doesn't like flowers. And you got a bigger problem. There are women who don't like flowers too. Right? Or I was just about to say that. Or women who are allergic to flowers. That's a separate issue. But here's the story. The real message here is a very powerful one. When we do things within our relationship that we want to show a level of affection towards a spouse, we have to make sure that our spouse feels that it's really about them and it's not about us. You know, I buy my spouse an anniversary present. What kind of anniversary present did I buy? Did I buy a spouse? I took my spouse on vacation. That was an anniversary present. Well, okay, that could be an anniversary present for the two of you, both of you together. Maybe if you decide to buy it for each other. But if I'm just doing something because I always wanted to do this, and yes, I'm dragging you along, well, that's not inherently for your spouse. That's also for you. I think that's an important context to keep in mind. And finally, you know, it's when we talk about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wanted when creating the world is ultimately Olam Chesed Yibane. Hashem created the world because He had nothing else to do with His time rather than make a world of chesed, of kindness. Because He wanted to bring about a place in the world where there would be kindness done to others. Hashem does kindness for us every day. We have to recognize the kindness that He does for us. And similarly, we have an obligation to recognize the kindness that our spouses perform for us on a daily basis. You know, there was one time when I said, decided that I didn't say thank you enough to my wife. And I just said, thank you for, you know, whatever it was, taking care of the kids or whatever it was. And she responded and said to me, for what? Thank you for what? Sometimes there needs to be a thank you just for thank you. Sometimes there needs to be a thank you just for being you. Sometimes there needs to be a thank you for just being able to share your life with me. And if we look at our lives with the intent of, as we started, with the intent of chesed shel emes, true chesed, not about doing something for my wife or doing something for my husband so that, you know, so that she does something back for me, but doing it because we want to share, then that is the ultimate epitome of what ahava, of love, is all about. The ability to share, the ability to be a baal chesed. There are people who are running around doing chesed all over the place, running to hospitals and visiting people, and you go and look at their homes, and you look at the emotional level of their home, you look at the chesed in their home, and it's barren, it's lost. We all know the famous story, I think it was that tells the Rosh Yeshiva, about the guy who was learning in Kollel, and he was learning nonstop, and of course, his wife was very sad, and the reason why she was sad, she went to see the Rav, and the wife said, look, all I ask of my husband is to take out the garbage. Right? And the husband says to the Rosh Yeshiva, I know that she wants that, but you know, look, ich bin a junger Mann, I'm learning in Kollel, I'm a respected individual, my neighbors can't see me taking out the garbage. It wouldn't be appropriate, so that's why I don't take out the garbage. And of course, the next day there's a knock on the door, and who's there? The Rosh Yeshiva, and he says, Yeshiva, what are you doing here? Because I'm here to take out the garbage. Very famous story, right? We all know the story. But the concept is that it works both ways. And the ability for us to recognize the greatness of our spouses, not only recognize it, but acknowledge it, costs us nothing and goes such a long way. We see that from the stories in Tanakh. We see that from the relationship between Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov and their wives. We see it from the various things that we touched upon. And ultimately, may we be zocha that in our lives we truly fulfill God's motto of creating the world by creating the world of chesed, by creating homes that are filled with chesed, and thereby being able to teach our children and our grandchildren what marriage is really about. Thank you.